roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty here on a Thursday. Good to be with you here for the next hour. We're live like we always are on Mondays and Thursdays here on Sportscaster MMA Junkie Radio, the official radio show of MMA Junkie, the five-time winner of the World MMA Awards. All right, on today's show, we're going to continue to unpack the UFC's lightweight division. Last week, we had a fearsome foursome of Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier, Dan Hooker, and Michael Chandler. Of those four, Michael Chandler and Dustin Poirier were the winners. So Khabib Nurmagomedov, I have not heard anything about that Vegas meeting with Dana White. I guess he's still champ. They haven't said otherwise, even though he keeps saying he's retired. But the rest of us seem to be moving on. So we'll talk about that because there's been some interviews out there. We know McGregor's coach, John Kavanaugh, says it should be my guy and Poirier, part three. Chandler saying it should be Poirier and I. Poirier, who we haven't heard from at the post-fight press conference, said, no, I'm not fighting Michael Chandler, but he was open to Charles Oliveira. And then he said, if I'm not going to fight that guy for the title, sure, at some point I'd like to fight McGregor part three or even Nate Diaz. But I don't know if the UFC would promote Nate Diaz for a title fight. Although with the UFC, anything's possible. So that's, we got to unpack all that. Plus, Darren Till, he's fighting Marvin Vettori. Jake Paul, God, I thought I'd never mention his name. He's going to be fighting Ben Askren in boxing. So we got a lot of news to cover, but we'll be starting the show with Sam Alvey. He's going to be coming in early today, so we'll do our guest early in the show and then get to all the news, but a lot to discuss here on MMA Junkie. So we'll be right back. We'll get things started.
Hola amigos, Danny Segura dropping in. Just wanted to let you know about MMA Junkie's latest podcast. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language show dedicated to all things professional fighting. Each Monday, we recap the major events from the weekend, plus we analyze the week's biggest news. We also bring you exclusive interviews with the best fighters, coaches, and experts in the Hispanic and Latin American scene. You can find Hablemos MMA every Monday morning on your favorite podcasting platform. Suscríbete y nos hablamos pronto. Chao.
Goes as we wait for Sam Alvey to join us. Quick reaction: Jake Paul versus Ben Askren. You pumped?
You know what? In a way, I kind of. I mean, I don't know if "pumped" is the word, but you took probably one of the worst strikers in MMA and put him up against a guy who has somewhat decent boxing skills for what he is. He's wouldn't really consider him like a professional fighter. So it's somewhat even. So now it's just it's like a WWE match. It's just somebody's got to eat crow, right? So I was even thinking this might even be the place to host one of those, George, here on Sportscaster. Because it's MMA. It's not MMA versus boxing, but it's MMA against something. I don't know what. And if you see some of the MMA fighters out in the world, they're trying to support Ben. But they're also kind of giving them, like, you better not lose, big dummy, you know, because we'll never hear the end of it.
Yeah, because Ben's polarizing, so he's probably pissed a lot of fighters off along the way. I bet you some will be cheering for Jake Paul. But they both come from the wrestling world. Jake Paul wrestled in high school, and Ben Askren, of course, was an Olympic-level wrestler. I wish Ben Askren would have said, look, I realize I'm not the next Floyd Mayweather. Nobody ever confused me with him, but I'm going to do this boxing thing. But then you and I, at some point, we're going to wrestle, and we're going to do it on your YouTube channel, even if it's just with no fans, a la Rocky Balboa and Apollo Creed. Remember when they just wanted to throw down one more time? Mm-hmm. Something like that. That way it gives me a chance to save some face in case this doesn't go my way. Because Ben was never really, like, he never came out and said, what's up, MMA? I got my wrestling, and I got these hands. You know, he was never really, like, vocal about it. He was always telling you, well, what are you going to do? I'm just going to go across the ring, or the cage, excuse me, take you down and beat you up. So he never hid the fact that that's what was going to be his plan. He never boasted hands or nothing like that. But he did sign up to throw hands. So we'll see. It'll probably wind up doing well. And even though I said I thought I'd never talk about this again, it looks like we're gonna, because people are talking about it and it is a traffic driver.
But you said it yourself, like the level of wrestling that Ben Askren has, when you think about it, the little success that he's had in striking and mixed martial arts, because he has hit people. It's not like he hasn't ever hit anyone. It's mostly due to the fact that you don't want to get taken down. So your eyes are constantly looking down, like, is he about to shoot on me? What do I do? And that's where he can fake that shot and come up and hit you in the face, kind of like what Michael Chandler did to Dan Hooker. But in this fight, there's none of that. You know, Jake Paul doesn't have to worry about that one bit. So all he has to worry about are Ben Askren's hands, his speed. There's just not a lot to go off of there, man. I'm almost saying, like, gun to the head, I might be Jake Paul in this fight. You?
I think so. I don't know. Maybe we'll have Coach Duke Rufus on to see if he can convince us otherwise. But it does look like to me that of the two, Jake Paul is the more skilled boxer. He's 2-0. Who'd he beat? Nate Robinson? And I forget who the other guy was, but he's 2-0. So you got to give him that. All right. So let's get to our guest here. He's coming on early. His name is Sam Alvey. He's going to be fighting Zach Cummings, on a fight night card in Las Vegas in April. We'll be right back.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports. Featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are, like, just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine.
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter. Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
There he is, Sam Alvey, fighting Zach Cummings in April. Listen, man, I wanted to ask you, how these fights, they just keep lining up. Is there a certain strategy to the fight you take? Like, do you let the UFC go, just don't give me a rematch, or the sooner the better, or, like, do they meet any of your criteria?
I'm the easiest guy in the world to work with because I don't have any criteria. They ask, hey, you want to fight this guy over here? So let's do it. And that has always been the case. It's led to some bad weight cuts. It's led to some short notice fights, but I think that's why they like me so much. I'm the guy that says yes always.
Mm-hmm. And so for you, it's the more the merrier. It's just income for the family, all that.
Yeah, I love fighting. I'm going to be training no matter what. I might as well get paid for my training.
Yeah, I saw that pic on Instagram. Dom Reyes in the house. Dan Henderson in the house. You guys had a nice little crew. We haven't seen you guys in about 18 months, but has the gym added some new killers over there at Team Quest in Temecula?
Yeah, you know, Dom Reyes, he's now a lot more – he's in more often than he ever has been before. Jared Vendera, he's making his UFC debut next month. We've got Jordan Winsky. We've got a lot of killers in the gym. Nick – what's Nick's last name? Nick is he fights in the UFC. I don't remember his name, but we've got killers in the gym, and it's just good training most of the time.
Nice. Okay. And then you're the instructor for how many classes per week?
I probably teach 12 classes a week between the kids' classes, the teenage classes, the adult classes. I teach the pros at least once or twice a week. I run the amateur team. So I keep myself very involved, very busy with all the fighters and athletes at the gym.
What would you say about your MMA program? I'm starting to learn more about the programs that are run in these gyms. Everybody keeps talking about James Krause and the tight ship he runs at Glory MMA in Kansas. How about Temecula? What would you say is some of the cornerstone pieces of the mentality, the culture of your guys' practice or your gym or whatever's going on over there?
Yeah, so I've got I can only teach what I know, and what I know is I really enjoy fighting. I know I wouldn't have had the career I've had if I did it because I needed to win, because I needed to do this. I did it because I really liked it. So everything we do is we try and breed, you know, raise these fighters, train these fighters to enjoy what they do, number one, because it's a hard sport to continue on if you don't like it. And then we've got, I mean, Joe Daddy Stevenson is one of our coaches. He's one of the happiest guys that have ever fought. Dan Henderson has always got a joke in his back pocket. Gustavo Pulgeis, he's our boxing coach. Tarek Safadine, he's a Muay Thai coach. So we've got a lot of experience from a lot of guys that really enjoy what they've done with their career and what they're helping others do with theirs.
I ask because Zach Cummings, as you know, is part of that gym. He's with James Krause. He's like his right-hand man, you know. And the one thing, I guess, that I've gathered from their gym is they don't miss practices. And they, you know, they let James basically hold them accountable. But you know, what they want to make sure is that they're as prepared as possible. We got kind of a little bit of that intel, not just from James, but recently, Gina Mazzani, who used to train at Extreme Couture here in Vegas, she went there and she was kind of giving us a little bit of a lowdown. So do you feel like your gym will match that intensity in the preparation for you versus Zach Cummings?
Oh, there's no doubt in the world that my gym is the most intense gym in the planet. We've got that old school way of training because Dan Henderson is the head of our gym. He was the pride days. He was the guy you come in, you bust ass every day, you go win some fights, and then you do it all over again. And we very much kept that alive and thriving at our gym. We train all day, every day. We've got our training partners, but then we've got a lot of training partners too. So we go in there, we enjoy what we do, but we really push hard. Time to push and harden.
Who was I hearing in the background? About a year ago, you were adopting a kid, right?
Yeah, as of last Friday, I have successfully adopted my first child. It took about 22 months. Nice. We were fostering her for about 22 months. And as of last Friday, she is a legal Albie. She's been an Albie from day one, but she is, in the eyes of the law, she's an Albie.
Congrats. What's her name?
Allie. Alison Simone Albie is her name.
Nice, man. How old is she? And like,
she'll be two in May. So what's that, 22 months? I've had her since she was born.
Congrats to you and your wife. I know you guys have been working on that for a while. It's very, very commendable as well. And you have a nice, big, growing family, man.
Oh, we've got five and work. The oldest is seven. So it's 7, 6, 4, 1, and 1.
There you go. All right. Sam, that pumped me up, man. That pumped me up when you said, we're the hardest working gym in MMA. We get after it, because I'm trying to analyze what's going to be the future of this sport as everybody constantly evolves. It seems like we got a good grasp on weight cuts. You know, you mentioned weight cuts earlier. A lot of people just happen to move up. They're not doing the extreme weight cuts anymore. And then TBI, you know, like, hey, a lot of gyms are limiting their sparring and trying to be smart about sparring. But at the same time, man, if you're going to be a champ, if you're going to be winning and keeping your job at this high level, you know, you do have to put in the work. So it's a nice gradual evolvement that these gyms and these fighters have to make, you know, from like the Dan Henderson era to now this era. So it's always great to hear like this type of intel from you guys.
Yeah, and I've never experienced the no sparring before. I've had injuries where I couldn't spar, so I did, and I hated every second of those camps. They were so boring, and you go out and you just feel flat. You don't feel right. So I have all the respect in the world to Max Holloway, and the dude has done more in his career than I have in mine so far. But I'm not a fan of that no sparring technique. I love sparring. It makes my MMA life so much more fun. I get to go out and, you know, I get paid to fight, but I get to have fun for sparring.
What's the rule on sparring in your gym? Like, is there a day where, hey, Fridays we go hard, or two times a week we go hard, and then the rest of the time we're maybe just touching and working on technique? Like, have you guys sorted that out?
We spar with big gloves on Monday. We spar with little gloves on Thursday. Friday is boxing, where we're going to hit each other, but we're not going to kill each other. Tuesday is wrestling, where we will hit each other on the ground. And Wednesday is more of an MMA, a little bit more technique over just hitting each other. But that's just the pro classes. At night, we've got the jiu-jitsu and the Muay Thai and the you know, more boxing. We're real good with it. We know our training partners. We know how hard we can go. We know when we're injured, and we kind of know when our training partners are injured.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's give Goes one more shot. Goes?
How about now? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear
you. Awesome. Well, what I was going to ask you, Sam, was when it comes to camps, you know, you've seen so many different styles from fighters. You've been there, done that. Are these camps now, are there a lot of adjustments that need to be made from camp to camp? Say for Zach Cummings, is it more about preparing for him, or is it more about preparing Sam Alvey?
It's for preparing me. I'm going to train the same way no matter who I'm fighting. I may focus on little things. I may focus on a jab more or a cross more, or I'm going to look to roll a little bit more. So there are things like that. But for the most part, I know what kind of fighter I am. I know what I have to do, and I think I know what kind of fighter he is. So I'm just going to make sure I'm, you know, on point. I'm sharpened and ready for action. Because I know if I'm sharpened and ready for action, he doesn't stand a chance.
You brought up weight cuts in the past. This one's going to be at middleweight.
Yeah.
How much different does your life have to change when this happens?
Significantly. I got about 40 pounds to go. but it's okay. I'm not used to it recently, but I'm used to it a lot throughout my career. I always walk around 225, and then I got to work my way back down to 185. If I can lose 25 pounds and then cut the last 15, that'll make everything pretty easy. Easy, quote unquote. It'll never be easy, but it'll be worth it when I'm getting my hand raised.
So if you're walking around, let's just say the Performance Institute, and you come across Dana White and he says, "Hey, I heard you went down to middleweight again. Are you still my anytime, anyplace guy?" Or,
"Oh yeah, no, I've always said if they need me to fight 70 again, I'll groan and I'll get there. If they need me to fight 205, I'll groan and I get there. And if they need me to fight heavyweight, anyone but Nogano. I take anyone but Nogano."
Wow. So you'd even do 70 if you had to?
I love the UFC. I love what they've done for me. I love the career and the life they've helped me develop for myself.
You don't need to do 170, dude.
I don't, but you remember they asked me to do it on Tough, and I made it twice. And I've sworn never again, but if they need me to.
So, Sam, you mentioned just how much you love doing what you do. What is the particular, if there's one thing you can point to, what is it that you love about fighting? Is it the actual fight? Is it the preparation, the camaraderie between you and your teammates? What is it that you love so much? Because we're all staring at you, and you're this nice guy, always smiling. You've always welcomed us in the gym. You're one of the nicest people we know. What is it about fighting that you love?
One of my favorite things about my career is, here, I'll show you guys. I never at any point have to wear shoes. I am barefoot 98%. I have to run a little bit and I'll put some shoes on. The rest of the time I am barefoot. And I love it. I love having the freedom to be able to choose my path. As long as I show up and I win, I can keep doing that. And I love the freedom it's represented. Sparring, like I said, sparring and fighting, it's all fun. But at the end of the day, I am in complete control of my destination.
About 3 years ago, roughly, you told us, "Man, I think I got to get out of California." And we were like, "No, man, that's where we're from. You crazy or what?" But, bro, let me tell you something. We live in Vegas, as you know. And they are building houses left and right because a lot of people are making this exodus from California. And for me, I won't get into the political thing, but for me, the one thing I noticed for sure was the state tax thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to see if you could give me an update. You know, did you fall back in love with California? If things changed in any way, or you still can't wait to get the hell out, or what's your update with California?
Well, there's no falling back in love with California. I never loved it to begin with. I tolerated it at best. But actually, as of right now, my wife and I have a 5-acre ranch bought, or at least it's in escrow in Tennessee. That will be the future home of Smile and Sam, and then I'll camp where I need to camp, whether that's back here in California. But yeah, she and I, we cannot wait to get out of the state, and we will never look back. I hope that all these people moving to Vegas area don't come and ruin your state like they ruined this one. But I cannot wait to get out of Cali.
What part of Tennessee? Can you share that?
Yeah, I'll be in Murfreesboro, which is about 45 minutes. I'll be at the northern end of Murfreesboro, so really about 30 minutes from Nashville. It's a beautiful area. It's green. There's rivers. There's lakes. There's hunting. It's actually a little horse ranch I'm buying. So I got to learn how to ride a horse, and then it'll be good.
You got to wear shoes for that, right?
I'm going to have to wear shoes for that. Maybe I'll be that weird guy that, you know, horseback rides barefoot.
So you never know. Yeah. Kevin Von Erich was a pro wrestler, and his thing was barefoot. And then there was pro football guys. Remember, guys, both of you? I'm sure you're old enough to remember the barefoot kicker in the NFL. We don't see them anymore. But like in the 80s and 90s, there was about 10 of them out there.
I don't remember that, but y'all have a little more experience than I am, I think.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, there used to be some barefoot kickers in the NFL. I remember a guy named Mike Transford. Cool. He kicked for the Rams, and one day they had a game in Chicago when it was snowing. I was like, oh, God, that's brutal.
Yo,
but he was good. Yeah. He was good. There was a few of them out there. They don't really come back to me right now, but that's one guy for sure I remember. But now they all wear their shoes. Okay, so that means – once you move and you're in escrow, so it sounds like somewhat similar or somewhat soon, but that means no more teaching or anything. You'll just be camping back in Temecula or wherever, and that'll be it, but no more teaching?
Well, we're going to figure that part out. I love teaching. It has been part of my career for as long as I've been a fighter. And my intent is I'm going to have my own gym in Tennessee, Murfreesboro, Tennessee. So if anyone out there is watching from the area, hit me up, and I'll give you the best training in Tennessee. But I don't know how fast that'll be. Like, we're going to develop it, and I don't want to just jump into it. I've seen a lot of fighters put all their money into buying the greatest gym that's ever been, just to go belly up shortly after. So we're going to ease into it. We're going to make sure it makes financial sense, and we're going to go from there.
On your ranch, the gym will be, or in town?
Ooh, that's a good idea, putting it on the ranch, but we'll see. It'll probably be in town. But I do like the idea of doing it on the ranch.
Okay. And lastly, will that mean you will, so it sounds like you would do your training there, your teaching there. So your time at Temecula, Team Quest Temecula will be over soon.
I plan on camping out here. I can't get better coaches. They're all here. That's one of the reasons I'm slow playing what's going to happen in Tennessee exactly. And maybe I can find a local gym. I'd be happy to teach at until I start my own place, if they're okay with that. But, you know, for the foreseeable future, my main source of income is going to be fighting, because I love doing it. I'm still pretty good at it, and I'm looking forward to having a good second half of my career.
I think you and Zach Cummings is going to be a fun scrap, man. I can't wait. Thanks for the time today. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Sorry I couldn't give you longer. I got too many kids for that.
It's all right, man. And congrats again on the adoption of your new baby girl.
Hey, I really appreciate that, sir. We'll talk again soon.
All right. Take care.
Bye, sirs.
There you have it, folks. That's Sam Alvey.
Did he call us old?
No, he said bye, sirs.
No. Did he call us old? Because he said something about not remembering Carney Lansford. He goes, I think you guys are a little bit, I can't remember. No, I don't know.
He said, I think you guys are a little bit more in tune with probably pro football. I was listening for that too. And I would have taken that one, because I was referring to a guy, the Mike Lansford era, I think, if I had to guess, was like in the 80s. Do you remember Mike Lansford games?
I thought it was Carney Lansford.
No, that was the third baseman for the Angels and then the Boston Red Sox. And then I think even the Oakland A's.
There were like three or four of those barefoot kickers.
There was a few of them. If I had to guess, I put 10. I think one was Tony Franklin from the Eagles. And I think he had the record for the longest field goal, 63 yards for a good long while. And then I think a guy named Jason Elam might have broke it, but he was in barefoot. 67, and then I don't know if 67 was ever broken. Those guys can hit it from 70, but when they're doing the warm-ups, but in a game, I don't know if 67 or 68 still stands or what. I'll probably Google it here in a second because it'll kill me. It'll drive me nuts. But every NFL season that started probably between 80 and 90, it was probably about at least two or three on rosters. And then, you know, new ones would come in. And then eventually, I don't know when the last one went out. So I don't know if a coach just said nope, or if that took away from the length of how far they could do it, or guys were just maybe getting back to the younger guys saying, put on a shoe. Trust me, I can never walk again. I don't know.
I wish we had more time with him because I really wanted to dive into – I felt like maybe there was a loan shark behind him or something. Like, what – at this point in his career, what business does he have going to 170? Like, what is going on? How much was that ranch? I don't know, but 170, not good. That's a big dude.
Yeah, I think he was probably just trying to make his point by saying, I'm available, I'll do it all, but I don't think he would do that. That would have to be like, hey, man, it turns out Usman wants to fight somebody for the title and he picked you. And, you know, you can't turn that down. But unless it's something like that, I think you see how comfortable he is at 205. This one's at 185. And we mentioned the fight's in April, so he has plenty of time to do it right. But I think that's probably him fooling about. The same thing goes for heavyweight. Even though he said he would fight another heavyweight, and he's technically a heavyweight when he enters the octagon after weighing in as a light heavyweight. And well, hell, he just told us he weighs 225. But you could tell the joke was there. As long as it's not Ngannou, well, I'm sure there's a few other names we don't want to see him in there with, you know, because those dudes are just too big.
I was kind of laughing at the end because obviously we can't do it when this show's going on. But when we do our other show, our Triple G show on Patreon, if you ever hear, I don't know if you heard in his background, the clanking of like a fork or a spoon, that's usually what would get us to stop and go, all right, I think it's time to wrap up. Because what that means is either Juliet or Laura or our mom is cooking something and it's getting pretty damn close to being finished. So when I heard that in his background, I saw his eyes and I could tell something's waiting for Smiling Sam.
Some bacon and eggs.
Yep.
Well, he did say he's got the kids to help get ready. And then I think he grabs that bag and puts in a long day at the Team Quest Temecula. So anyway, again, thanks to Alvy for his time. And then going back to Jake Paul versus Ben Askren, anything else that you wanted to finish? Any thoughts there? And then we'll talk about MMA.
Yeah, I think there's zero MMA guys that are rooting for Jake Paul. Even if they hate Ben Askren, I think they just don't want to hear their sport. A guy that you can say a former champion at Bellator and then have a guy like Jake Paul just completely destroy him in boxing. That's just not a good look. So I think even if there's an MMA fighter that doesn't like Ben Askren, I think they're still rooting for him.
I don't know why I just thought of this. It's silly, but what if Ben Askren showed up to the fight? The fight's on a Saturday, we'll say, and then he shows up on a Friday, and then he can't go for whatever reason. Fill in the blank, I don't know. But my teammate, Anthony Pettis, who's been training with me, who's here, he was here carrying my stuff in the weigh-ins and to corner me. He says he'll step in a la James Krause, a la Uriah Faber, kind of like the little – quick turnaround, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I wonder what the face would be on Jake Paul. I wonder if he'd go, let's do it. Or if he'd be like, no, I signed up for Ben Askren. I wonder if Ben Askren would be that conniving to pull something like that off.
I actually think Jake would do it because I don't know if there's that many paydays like that out there for him. And I think he would do it. And Anthony, the thing about Anthony is just like pace. He'd be able to pace himself really well. And
or T. Wood. T. Wood's a teammate too.
Yeah.
He would be I was trying to do my best Johnny Ringo. Remember when Johnny Ringo shows up in Tombstone for that gun duel against Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday shows up instead? And then he just goes, "All right, Lunger, let's do it." But in no way did that sound like, "What's up, bitch?" You know, I mean, it was like, "All right, Lunger, let's do it." But you could tell he was like, "Oh, dear God, my life is over. This is to the death. We're pulling out guns here. You know, this isn't like noogies or we're slapping each other." Like, they got down back in the day, back in the good old West. But I can't imagine Johnny Ringo thinking, "This is easy, Wyatt Earp. He's a tough son of a bitch, and you know, and nobody will mess with him, you know, all that." But when it comes to guns, you know, Johnny Ringo, he's the guy. And then all of a sudden, and Wyatt Earp's on his deathbed. He's, you know, he's got tuberculosis, that was Doc. He was just mourning the death of his brother, but you could just tell he wasn't a speed guy, you know. So the other guy literally thinks he's showing up for a layup. And then all of a sudden, Doc Holliday, man. I wonder if Ben Askren and T. Wood or Anthony Pettis could pull something like that off.
I mean, I think he'd still do it. I think Jake Paul would do it, but definitely not T. Wood. I think I'd take Pettis over T. Wood.
Well, they're both in that range of 55 or 70. That means their walk around is probably like that 75, 80 range. Mm-hmm. Look, every one of these MMA fighters looks pretty good when they're just hitting pads. And then for some reason, a lot of them just don't look as good once the fight starts. Jake Shields was notorious for that. Ben Askren was notorious for that. But if you're not worried about anything else and that's all you're doing, you just never know. If Ben Askren can somehow kind of do a little bit of Thunder Lips versus Rocky, where he kind of roughs him up earlier and then he takes those fouls, like, "This is your last warning. You know, this isn't wrestling. Why are you taking him down?" Just anything to throw him off his game, intimidate him or whatever. And then, you know, maybe he'll have some sort of a chance. Maybe the other guy will have some sort of an adrenaline dump. I don't know. I would pull out every single last trick in the book if I was Ben Askren, instead of just going up there and just squaring up. I think he's going to lose if he just squares up. But if there's some tricks, maybe an elbow, you know, "Hey, boo, that's against the rules. That's your second warning," you know, "All right, whatever." But maybe you just roughed them up a little bit.
I think there'll be some instinct in there for Ben. You know, yesterday, Danny Segura spoke to Thiago Alves, and he asked him about bare knuckle, you know, and the change that is, because Thiago Alves is known for his leg kicks and how devastating those can be. And he actually said, he goes, "I actually almost threw two." He goes, "One at the end of round two, and I think one in the middle of round three." No, a leg kick.
Really?
And yeah, he just goes, "It's, you're so conditioned to fight that way," that he goes, "it just comes out of you." He goes, "I almost did it on accident." He goes, "I didn't do it on purpose, but," he goes, "I almost did it." I could see Ben Askren, if he gets in trouble, maybe doing something like that, save face. I don't know.
I would. If I was Ben Askren, I would. I would throw every trick in the book, because, you know, his career's over. He was a legendary wrestler in college. He made it to the Olympic team for our country. And then he actually had, I mean, I know the exit wasn't graceful, but he had a very, very good MMA career. He was a world champ at Bellator. He was a world champ at ONE. He defended his belts. He was undefeated for a long time. Came over to the UFC. Proved himself. He really could have beat Robbie Lawler and said, "All right, I proved it. I can hang with those guys. But if you're not giving me a title shot, I'm out." Instead, he got, you know, kneed by Masvidal, submitted by Maya. And so the exit doesn't look as good. But he really, really just could go in there, have some fun with Jake Paul. And I don't think anybody would ever hold it against him, you know, even if he did some dirty tactics. But whatever. Enough of that. All right, we'll get to the lightweight division in just a second. We'll probably close with that, but I like hearing Marvin Vettori versus Darren Till. That's a nice non-title booking for the UFC.
Poor Marvin Vettori, man. That guy never gets a day off. That's a great fight. Both guys have a lot to prove. Marvin, Marvin Vettori in the last fight kind of proved that he just deserves to be up at that upper echelon. But a lot of people still feel like he has more to prove. And Darren Till just has to prove to us that we all know he's tough, but can he maintain, you know, can he get on a win streak? That's still there. I think it's a great fight, but I think I lean towards Marvin Vettori in this type of fight.
You're not going to believe what I just did. Early on, boy, that's a good fight. I really do like Till's kickboxing, but Marvin Vettori's been proving me wrong. I thought he was going to be a middle-of-the-pack middleweight, but that doesn't mean that out of 100 middleweights, they probably have 80 in the UFC. That doesn't mean I thought he was number 40 or 41. What I thought was, what I'm trying to say is that out of the top 20 middleweights, I thought he was going to hover between 8 and 12 and maybe always come up short against the Whitakers, the Izzy's, you know, and some of those guys. But I've been proven wrong. He's a top 10 guy for sure, and now he's arguably top 5. And you know, all the competition is going to be good for Marvin Vettori, but he's solid, man. He's really, really solid. I guess I would pick Marvin Vettori at this point, but don't discount Darren Till. I've always liked his kickboxing. I love his tenacity. I think him as middleweight, especially growing into a middleweight, I think that'll be the best Darren Till out there. So we'll see. But guess what, goes? We got to go back to Jake Paul and Ben Askren. I hit refresh on MMA Junkie. Guess who's training Jake Paul?
That's why I was laughing. The dork comment.
Jorge Masvidal is training Jake Paul for Ben Askren. So why would he do that? I guess he wants to insert himself into the narrative here. Jorge's beyond all that. Like, he's a top welterweight. I want to know when his next fight is. I don't want him training Jake Paul, but whatever. I think Jorge appreciates the entertainment side of combat sports, so maybe it's just a one time. Who knows? But I don't think Jorge Masvidal will be rooting for Ben Askren.
I mean, dude, I really don't know, but you can't put anything past Jorge Masvidal. Look at his career and some of the things that he's done outside of MMA. I remember his career kind of started on YouTube as well, and with the Kimbo fights, and then he's broken off and done the XL Ton show and all that stuff. So I mean, I think he kind of enjoys that side of fame as well. So and anytime he gets a chance to kind of poke at Ben, I think he likes doing that as well. It's just kind of funny, man. It really is like it shadows pro wrestling a little bit, like all the little storylines that keep happening with this all. I'm kind of getting a kick out of it, to be honest, and seeing Jorge involved. Jorge's one of the better MMA guys that has boxing skills. So, like, if you told me, man, we got to put an end to this Jake Paul guy, who can really get it done from mixed martial arts, Jorge Masvidal might be one of the first names that comes out of my mouth. So that kid,
I agree.
Maybe he's seeing a little bit of a future in these type of fights. I don't know, but it was a crack up.
Yeah. Well, that fight's still a few months away or whatever, but let's finish talking here about, let's go back to the lightweight division, the UFC's lightweight division. There's been some interviews that have been interesting that I've seen. Michael Chandler says it should be me and Poirier. Hard to disagree with him, but it's also hard to not listen to Charles Oliveira, who's got UFC stock. You know, he's not a former champ anywhere, but he's won 8 in a row. And he just beat Tony Ferguson. So he can match Chandler saying, well, I just beat Dan Hooker. Well, I just beat Tony Ferguson, you know. Well, I got a 4 or 5 win streak, which I think is what Chandler has, maybe even 5 now. Well, I got 8, you know. Well, I'm a former champ. Well, I'm not a former champ, but I've been in the UFC for a while. And that's what Poirier seems to be saying is, hey, look, man, these are the guys that have been grinding with me. That's why I'm more interested in fighting Poirier than Michael Chandler. He goes on to say, you know, no disrespect to Michael Chandler. I realize he's a stud, but he's more interested in Oliveira. Habib and Dana. I haven't heard about any old meeting in Vegas. I thought that's what Dana White had said. But the last I checked on Habib on his social media, didn't look like he was in Vegas. So perhaps that was it, you know, that little chat that they had, that was it. Or maybe the Vegas meeting is next week. I don't know. but he hasn't been stripped, and they wouldn't because he's officially retired. So I think the only thing they would say is, yeah, he's retired, and it would be vacated, and we would hear some sort of an announcement. I don't know. McGregor's coach is saying, hey, how about part three for the title? Nobody's feeling him. Habib's coach, Javier Mendez, said, imagine what we would have done to McGregor, which has nothing to do with the title talk, but he just happened to throw that jab in. So I was just watching these series of interviews being, you know, being thrown around. AG's laughing at McGregor. Ha-ha, that's what you get. You got a big mouth. You see the thumbnail is him flipping off. What I imagine would be McGregor or Team McGregor. Mm-hmm. So he's relishing that KO.
But his quote,
what do you think of all this?
Gagey's quote was great. It's basically what a lot of people feel, and it's Conor McGregor has gotten a lot of special treatment, and even with that, he wasn't able to perform. So Justin, I think, even went as far as saying if he were to get another title shot, he would consider never fighting in the UFC ever again, because that's just how offended he would be at something like that. But I mean, come on, dude, to even throw that out, that let's do it again now for a title, just means you live on a completely different planet. But here's the thing. The UFC, I mean, I think they have to have their limits, George. This has got to be the limit here. But they've done crazy shit. So for Conor to even throw that out, I can't hate him. I really can't hate him, because they'll do things like that for him. But at this point, I just think it's absolutely impossible. I don't know how the UFC could sell it. I don't think the UFC is thinking about that anymore, though. I really think what they're trying to figure out is, what is their problem? How are they going to fix this whole Michael Chandler, Charles Oliveira, and Dustin Poirier situation? There is what's right. And I think what's right would probably be put Charles Oliveira and Dustin Poirier against each other. And then there is what the UFC wants to do, and they're a business, and how are they going to make money? And I believe that avenue has to go through Michael Chandler, and they're going to try and figure out how they can sell that to people, because somebody's going to have to take a backseat. And how the hell are you going to tell Dustin Poirier to take a backseat after what he just did? And then how could you tell Charles Oliveira on that streak for him to take a backseat? It's really, really tough. I'm very interested in seeing how the UFC and Dana White are going to handle this. But one of our questions on Spinning Back Click was kind of along the lines of, hey, this whole time with what was going on with Conor McGregor, were we just being sold wolf tickets? You know, was this all about trying to set up Conor and Habib? And boy, it's starting to look that way, isn't it?
It sure is. It backfired. They'll never admit it. That's not what they do. But it definitely looks like that's, you know, their eggs were definitely in that basket. And who knows, maybe what Habib really said was, if McGregor looks good, maybe I'll come back, because the numbers are just astronomical, you know, what I could make to beat up a guy that I already beat up and who I enjoy beating up. But then I saw that Dana White looking for a fight, and there was some video footage of them two. Habib was a special guest. It was an event called UAE Warriors. And Habib was a guest there. And Dana White's talking to him, and he tells him, hey, this Poirier-McGregor fight part two is trending to be really, really high, possibly number two to you and McGregor. And then he says, imagine what you and McGregor would sell. And then Habib just kind of like looks at him like you would politely, to somebody who I guess is still technically your boss, and just kind of like doesn't say anything rude, you know, and it's almost like Dana White invited him over for dinner and he's chewing something he doesn't like and he just kind of eats it, but they'll never be having dinner at his house again. You know, he's not enjoying the experience. But that's not what happened. McGregor didn't win. McGregor didn't look bad, folks. He didn't look bad. It's just Dustin looked better. Dustin hit him in that knee. He wrestled with him. He tangled with him. And, you know, he clinched with him against the cage. He out MMA'd him. Conor was basically boxing most of the time. But McGregor hit him with some really, really hard shots. But Dustin Poirier was still standing. And then all of a sudden, Dustin Poirier got in on him and finished him. So it's not like I'm opposed to McGregor Poirier part three. We need to see it. We just don't need to see it next for the title. But we need to see it at some point. In fact, we might need to see that fight more than Nate Diaz versus Conor McGregor. The other one's heated rivalry, but they don't seem that heated anymore. You know, them two were hugging at the end of part two. You could tell it was like, hey, we made some money, some big money together. But I don't see them like having run-ins or having a go at each other much. And not that Poirier and McGregor are. It's just that it's fresh. And they're two of the higher-ranked lightweights, whereas Nate, between him competing as a welterweight here and taking a lot of time off over here and doing BMF over there, he has no stock in any of the divisions. So that's why we can't talk about him fighting for a title in any of the two divisions, 170 or 155. You can only throw him in there in a BMF part two. And who wants to see that one again? I don't. I want to see Colby versus Masvidal, and the winner gets the winner of Burns versus Usman. That, done, settled. Okay, next. Habib's retired. All right, fine. Then it's Poirier versus Oliveira or Poirier versus Chandler. Pick one. All right, it's this guy. All right, done. Next. You know, I want to start just eliminating pieces along the way. And if we're left with Conor versus Nate, then I guess we run it. But I don't want to shove titles and force titles on anyone that doesn't deserve it. Diaz and McGregor don't deserve it right now. McGregor did against Poirier last week. That should have been for a title, and it wasn't. But now McGregor's just out of those sweepstakes. Now, McGregor wins once or twice. He's always in the running because he's super popular, and he only fights the top guys usually. So two wins usually will have him back on the hunt.
I think it's got to be Diaz and McGregor. But I will say this, only because, I mean, come on, you just can't do Poirier and McGregor. But when you look at the two trilogies, Conor slept Dustin, Dustin slept Conor. But if you look at Diaz and McGregor, Diaz finished Conor. Conor, it took judges to tell you who won that fight, right? So technically, if I'm Nate Diaz and we never fight a third time, I say, hey, man, advantage me. I finished you. You didn't finish me. So really, that one has a little bit more of an end to it than the Poirier and McGregor potential trilogy.
What if Conor goes, you're only as good as your last fight?
I would just keep showing him pictures of him asking for mercy. I mean,
I know. Well, I don't know, man. I guess the first thing is we need to just have the UFC vacate that belt because it sounds to me like Habib's done. I'll keep checking the Instagram and Twitter and just see if Habib is making his way to Vegas. That gives you hope because he really doesn't need to come back for a meeting. They just had the meeting. Why does he need to come for another meeting unless Habib was already coming to corner somebody? But I remember Dana saying that he was headed this way. So maybe it was just to get some training or but I'll have to look at one of the cards, maybe a teammate fighting, and it's inevitable that it happens again. But it's so ridiculous. If he's impressed on Saturday, come on, he didn't say that because two guys were very impressive on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about this in the chat room. Chili Billy saying, Dustin Poirier versus Oliveira, Justin Gaethje versus Michael Chandler, Conor versus Nate. Would that solve everything? And would you give Justin Gaethje, Michael Chandler is a great fight. I would love to see that, but I don't know that UFC would do it.
If I'm Chandler, I say I'll just take the winner of Oliveira and Dustin.
Can he, though?
I don't know. I mean, I would say it because if they fight quick and he only has to wait 6 or 7 months, then sure, you know. But I wouldn't take another fight if I was this close to a title, if I'm Michael Chandler. Now I may be wrong and Michael Chandler might be foaming them at the mouth and saying, fucking line them up. Then if he's saying that, then sure, of course Gaethje belongs in there with Chandler. And of course Chandler belongs in there with Gaethje. They're two of the top guys. Yeah. Who nobody has a problem with that one. You know, but I'm just thinking if I'm Chandler, because there's two ways to think about it. I used to say you either get him now or you get him as title defenses. If you get him now, you're pushing them out of the way on your road to the title. And that means you probably don't have to see them anytime soon because you beat them along the way. Or you can get to the title soon and then defend against these guys, you know. So you're usually going to meet up with them anyway. Chandler strikes me as a legacy guy, not as a money guy. He is a money guy in some sense, and he has been, and he's proven it to us. I think Bellator made it lucrative for him to stay. But now that I think he got a taste of the UFC and he proved to himself that he could hang with the best, then I think seeing what his compatriot did in Eddie Alvarez winning Bellator and the UFC, and imagine if Eddie wins one, that's a nice career, bro. Anyway, you slice the pie, Eddie Alvarez has had a nice career. And that's considering he lost the biggest fight of his life, and that was versus Conor McGregor. At least the biggest spotlight fight of his life. But I think Chandler's looking at that going, how can I do that, you know? So let's say Poirier and Oliveira can run it in April, then why couldn't Chandler get the winner in August? Now, if Poirier and Oliveira are chosen, but they need some time off, and they're not fighting till June or July, then that's where I could see Michael Chandler going, all right, me and Gaethje on the same card, the winner gets the winner of this fight. Because now it looks like you're pushing his fight a whole year, and I don't think Chandler wants to wait a whole year. I might be wrong. I don't know. These are all just kind of guesses, you know, but I would rather have these guys as title defenses versus fighting them on the road to the title, because on the road to the title, you're basically at the UFC's beck and call, and the UFC doesn't care. The UFC wants the shiniest diamond, whoever may be. They polish them up all they can. But, dude, it is so tragic when you look back and see that Tony Ferguson has not been an undisputed champ. He's made it to interim, but not an undisputed champ. And he fought so many fights before even getting a chance to fight for the world title. You know what I mean? It's super, super sad to me. He had built up more of a case than Eddie, than RDA, than Connor, you know, but he just wasn't in the right place at the right time, I guess. So, I you know, that's my advice. Depending on how quick they do Oliveira and Poirier, if they choose Oliveira and Poirier. Now, if I'm Oliveira and they choose Chandler and Poirier, I could see Oliveira saying, I don't give a fuck. Give me whoever. Because he's got like this young man swag where I think he'll fight anybody right now. You know what I mean? I think Chandler's a little more strategic. I think Oliveira's just like, line him up, bro.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. And then as far as Gaethje, well, he just fought for the title. So if he beats Chandler, would he be next? I don't know. He may need two fights. Ferguson's going to need at least two fights, right place, right time. McGregor needs at least two fights, right place, right time. Maybe not. Maybe McGregor can get away with one, and then if he goes, all right, I'll fight him, of course the UFC will make it. Hooker needs at least two fights before he can be considered for a title. And then these other guys, Dariush and Fajeda, run it. Let's do it. I you know, Dariush already beat him. I wouldn't have. If I was Dariush, I wouldn't fight him again. I already beat this guy. Why am I fighting him again? Give me another one. Give me Gaethje or someone. I don't know. But he's taking on Fajeda soon, next week, I think. Makhachev can't stay healthy. Gillespie's fishing all the time. Lee's coming back from a knee injury. I wonder if knees are on – or not. Lee's around that point where his knee might be 100. Is he?
I thought he was doing sparring the other day at Extreme.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yeah, he's another guy to keep an eye on. Pettis in his last fight said, nope, I'm going back down to 155, but he always changes his – well, actually, he moved. He went to PFL. Never mind. I don't know. I don't know what other names are out there to really, really consider other than the ones that are, like I say, charging up the ladder. Drew Dober's another guy to keep an eye on. Mm-hmm. But that's the division. I think I covered it. Hold on, I got the rankings right here. Want to make sure I didn't leave anyone out. Habib, Dustin, Gaethje, Oliveira, Ferguson, McGregor, RDA. Remember when RDA won and he was like, hey, what about me? I'm a former champ. Dude, that's just a sport. You know, like who spoke last is usually the one that gets their shine. And that's why going back to Shiriko, that was his chance to just say, me, I beat the guy that had the highlight reel, KO, you know, put me in a fight, talk about me, someone sponsor me, give me a watch or a hat or a drink, I'm in, you know, anything. and he didn't want to do that. But we can't forget about RDA. He's a former champ, and he beat Paul Felder. Paul Felder was a respectable name, the same way we gave Hooker shine and said, hey, he just beat Paul Felder. Give him Poirier. Well, RDA just beat Paul Felder as well. So he's sitting there waiting. I think he might be in the running to fight whoever doesn't get the fight versus Poirier.
He, people forget about him because of his 170 stint, you know? But I would love to see Michael Chandler fight RDA. Not because it makes sense or anything like that. I just think stylistically, that would be such a fun fight. Obviously, it's not going to happen anytime soon, I don't think. But I think it has to happen because I think that would be a great
fight. Michael Oliveira versus RDA would be fun on the ground.
Yeah.
Can't forget about that guy. I'm glad he came back because losing Pettis sucks, but we gained back RDA. But yeah, a lot of these guys, man, you know, Benson left a few years ago. Eddie left a few years ago. I think Melendez is done. Cowboy's past his prime, and Khabib just retired, and Tony just took two L's. And, you know, the division can go just like that. At one moment, you can look at it and go, nah, look at that. We got a super 20 at 155. Look at all these killers. And then all of a sudden, you just 6 months later, you're like, wow, we got 10 good ones, don't we? Because these guys left, and this guy moved to 170, and these guys are, you know, haven't been looking as good. That's how quick your fortunes can change in the sport.
Think about how long we've been covering the sport. When has 155 not been popping? It's always popping. There's always killers in those divisions. It's insane.
Dariush mentioned him, Paul Felder, and Ally Aquinta are two guys that have name value, but they just need to win. And if they win, then it's like, hey, what about these guys? You know what I mean? But as long as they don't tell us they're retired, name value goes a long way too.
Don't forget this. Possibly, I have to imagine the same way Michael Chandler came over at some point. I think Pitbull will probably come over as well, unless Bellator.
I think he's a featherweight, though. I think he should have his eyes on Volkanovski, not well, I can't even say Khabib because Khabib's not the champ. But
yeah.
I mean, if Chandler holds the card, if Chandler wins the title, then you're right, Pitbull could come over and play his card. But I think he's got the featherweight card because he's got title defenses. If he can win the Grand Prix, that would be huge. If he can give him a key that first,
man.
But, you know, I looked at the Bellator website, and they still don't have any announcements for any events. As of right now, I can't tell you. Can't wait for February. Like, you know, we don't know. I imagine February will have a Bellator or March. But as of right now, there's no events. I imagine Mohegan Sun is where they'll stay. But I can't tell you anything other than Bellator 254, I believe, was their last fight card. It took place in December, on December 10th. And I think that one had Velasquez and McFarlane, if I'm not mistaken. That was your main event. But we haven't seen anything yet as far as Bellator Europe or Bellator 255. We're waiting. We need to get that light heavyweight division going with the additions of AJ, Corey Anderson. He had his debut fight against Melvin Manhoff. Is Bader going to, you know, return and try and get that title back? And if so, is he going to let go of heavyweight? And if they are letting go of heavyweight, well, who's going to be their new heavyweight guy? Heavyweight's been a mess for them over the years as well. Featherweight, let's finish the goddamn Grand Prix already. We got two guys. Is it Sanchez and Pitbull in a semifinal? And then McKee's on the other side. He's already in the finals waiting. So we still got to have the semifinals just to see who fights in the finals. Luckily, there's at least title defenses along the way, but I want to see someone get their mill. I want some that fight, that tournament to finish. And then, just get it going. Daly's got one more fight, I think he said, right? Put him in against MVP. Mustasi's getting a little older. What's he going to do? You know, I mean, they're losing stars too. You know, they're losing stars too. And have they created enough new ones? Well, we'll see. I don't know. But PFL, they'll be joining us somewhere in around, I think, April. One championship. Did you see that announcement? They're going to have a run on TNT, four fight cards with DJ and Eddie Alvarez involved. So that's good. So MMA is going to start heating up again. It already did with the UFC. They had their three fights in 8 days, and then they skip this week, and they go next week. Next week, guys, did you look? Look, for a fight night, I got to tip my hat to the UFC. Next week's fight night has a main event of Volkov versus Alistair Overeem. And then the co-main event is Frankie Edgar versus Corey Sandhagen. That could be a main event.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad that's only three rounds for Frankie.
Yeah, so that's a huge fight. Marion Renault against Macy Chasson. They're going to be fighting. So I mentioned Fajeda versus Dariush. Dude, that's a good fight night. That's no joke of a fight night card.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Might be time to get the swabs and just go and check it out. Double mask it or something. I don't know. Anyhow, all right, folks, we're going to exit. Always fun sharing our Mondays and Thursdays with you. Noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, live here on Sportscaster. Check it out. A second and final thanks for all of you that joined us for our pay-per-view this past Saturday, McGregor versus Poirier and Chandler versus Hooker. It was a fun time. On our channel here, you can go back. If you just scroll down, you'll see all of our previous shows. You can scroll down and see if maybe one of your favorite fighters or MMA notables is there that we may have chat with. It's all there in video form, including our watch-alongs. If you want to see what a watch-along is like, it's just us watching the fights along with you. And hopefully we'll be doing a few more of those to start off the new year here with MMA Junkie and Sportscaster teaming up. Also, don't forget, you can do what we're doing. And I see it all the time, man. I see Lakers channels. I see NBA channels. So what does that mean? It means one guy is like, I'll talk about all the NBA, the Spurs and the Bucks, the Suns and the Knicks, the Lakers and Portland, you know, whatever. And then there's some that say, nope, I'm just the Laker guy. We're going to concentrate on the Lakers. We're going to break down the team and what's, you know, what are the team chances of repeating? So there's, you know, people that do that, people that pick a conference and college football. It's whatever you want to do. You write the script. You can be doing what we're doing. Just don't do MMA because we got the lockdown in MMA. But yeah, you can do whatever you want. You can do NASCAR, half pond. I've seen 6-year-olds call NBA games like Chick Hearn used to, the iconic voice of the Lakers used to. I mean, really, really doing good jobs. I think he was 6. Maybe he was 8, but that dude was awesome, that kid. You remember his name, guys?
I don't, but I actually subscribed to him, so I could have it for the next show.
He was amazing. He was amazing. And, yeah, like I say, you could be doing what we're doing. Play one less week. Play one less hour of video games. And come over here and hone your skills, and maybe you'll be on television one day. So check it out. All right, folks, enjoy your day. Thanks again to Sam Alvey, and keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week as we got the best coverage in mixed martial arts. We'll see you all on Monday. Go out there and be a champion.